You know, usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of clinical precision.
Right. It feels very scientific.
Yeah, like engineering or something. No. You fall down the stairs, you break your arm, the x-ray shows that stark, jagged white line on the screen, and the doctor just points to it and says, there it is.
It's binary. You look at the image, and the problem is neatly categorized, broken or not broken.
Exactly. And there's some comfort in that. But the moment you take that broken arm and step into the financial side of the American healthcare system, that metaphorical x-ray machine just shatters.
Oh, completely.
Suddenly, you are looking at a landscape that is completely murky, almost hostile. And we have a staggering stack of sources to explore today for this deep dive. We've got investigative reporting, extensive surveys from KFF, data from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and even historical court research from a physician on the front lines.
It's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. And when you lay all these sources out side by side, the scale of what we are dealing with is honestly breathtaking. We are talking about at least $220 billion in medical debt held by people in the U.S.
And, you know, to put that $220 billion into human terms, that is over 20 million adults.
Wow.
Yeah. That's roughly 1 in 13 people walking around today who owe more than $250 in medical debt. And it scales up incredibly fast from there.
I bet.
14 million owe over $1,000, and 3 million people owe over $10,000.
Yeah.
So this isn't some fringe issue affecting a tiny fraction of the population, right? It is a baseline reality of American life.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because engaging with the healthcare system today, I mean, it feels a lot like stepping onto a financial trapdoor.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
Right. You think you're walking on solid ground, you've got a job, you've got that little plastic insurance card in your wallet so you feel secure. But one bad step, like one unexpected illness, one out-of-network specialist who happens to just walk into your hospital room, triggers a mechanism, and you plunge into absolute financial ruin.
And what makes that trapdoor so insidious is that it's a structural feature of the system.
What do you mean?
Well, we often talk about medical debt as if it's a glitch, you know, an accident of paperwork. But the sources point to a much harder truth. The American healthcare system doesn't just produce medical care. It actively churns out debt. It manufactures financial instability that reshapes people's lives for decades.
Which means we really need to figure out who is actually falling through that trapdoor and how the mechanism works. Because the most surprising takeaway for me, poring over the KFF data, is that this isn't just an issue for the uninsured.
Not at all.
I always assumed that if you had insurance, you were largely shielded.
Yeah, that is the defining illusion of modern healthcare.
Yeah.
The primary mechanism driving this crisis is something researchers call the coverage cliff.
The coverage cliff.
Right. Over the past decade, employers and health insurers have quietly but steadily shifted costs directly onto patients. They didn't necessarily drop coverage, they just kind of hollowed it out from the inside.
Right, right. I was reading about how this works mechanically. You get a plan through your employer, and the monthly premium comes out of your paycheck, so you feel covered.
Sure.
But your deductible might be $5,000 or even $8,000. So if you get appendicitis in February, your insurance functionally doesn't exist until you've paid out $5,000 from your own Checkiff account.
Exactly. Add to that the steep co-pays, the co-insurance percentages, and the absolute labyrinth of out-of-network charges.
Mm.
Insurance today often doesn't eliminate financial risk. It just redistributes it.
Right.
The coverage cliff is that exact moment where the promise of your insurance policy gives way and the actual financial burden drops squarely onto your shoulders.
But I mean, if your insurance just delays the financial cliff rather than actually preventing the fall, is it really insurance at all?
It's a fair question.
It feels more like a leaky lifeboat. Sure, it might keep you from drowning in the first 5 minutes of the storm, but you are absolutely taking on water. If a big enough wave hits, you're going under anyway.
And the demographic data shows exactly who is drowning first. The burden isn't distributed evenly across the population. The KFF survey is incredibly clear here. Black Americans are disproportionately affected, with 13% reporting medical debt compared to 8% of white Americans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it heavily impacts people with disabilities, about 13% of whom carry this debt. And you also see a pronounced concentration among women and among people living in the South or in rural areas.
And what happens when you combine those demographics with the reality of that coverage cliff is this terrifying doom loop.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're listening to this, you might have made this exact calculation yourself. You feel a weird pain or a nagging cough, but you know you haven't hit your deductible yet, so you avoid the doctor.
Which is incredibly dangerous. Because by rationing your own care to avoid a bill you can't afford, your underlying health condition inevitably deteriorates.
Right.
A manageable issue becomes an acute crisis. You end up in an emergency room where the intervention is infinitely more invasive and tenfold more expensive.
The ultimate irony being that trying to save money on a copay basically guarantees you a catastrophic hospital bill later.
Which leads to a crucial realization from the KFF data. Poor health completely overrides income.
Wait, really?
Yes. We tend to think of debt as a low-income issue. But the data shows that even if you are in a household making 400% above the poverty line, so solidly middle or upper middle class, if you develop a chronic or complex health condition, you are still highly vulnerable.
That's terrifying.
Illness itself is the supreme risk factor for financial ruin, regardless of the size of your paycheck.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the moment you fall off that coverage cliff, the nature of your relationship with the hospital fundamentally changes.
It does.
You transition from a patient in a bed to a line item in a collections process. And the machinery of that process is shockingly aggressive.
Yeah, the transition from clinical care to financial extraction is swift. When a patient cannot pay that high deductible or that out-of-network surprise bill, hospitals frequently sell those unpaid accounts to third-party debt buyers.
Just offload them.
Exactly. And these buyers purchase the debt for pennies on the dollar, meaning they have a built-in financial incentive to use any means necessary to extract the full face value of the bill.
The industry uses this term, extraordinary collection actions.
Yes.
Which honestly sounds like a bureaucratic euphemism. It sounds like they might send you a slightly stern letter with red ink on the envelope. But when you look at the investigative work provided in our sources, particularly the historical research by Dr. Luke Masek, who is an emergency room doctor, it's an absolute nightmare.
It really is.
He went digging into his local county courthouse records and discovered his own hospital was weaponizing the legal system against patients.
And the scale of the lawsuits is what truly stands out in his findings.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, you might be thinking, okay, a hospital suing someone must be over a $100,000 NICU bill or a huge heart surgery.
Right.
But no, they were actively suing people for $1,000 to $2,000 for a single ER visit.
Over $1,000.
A billion-dollar institution dragging a single mom or someone on Social Security disability to court over $1,000. They bundle these accounts, hand them to an attorney, and just churn through the local docket like an assembly line.
And once a judge rules in the hospital's favor, which happens almost by default since many patients can't afford to take time off work to contest the suit, the hospital dictates the terms.
Unbelievable.
Dr. Masek found patients forced into onerous 7-year payment plans carrying 10 to 11% interest.
11%.
Yeah. A hospital bill essentially becomes a high-interest predatory loan.
And if you can't keep up with that 11% interest, the legal remedies they used to collect are basically medieval.
They are very aggressive.
In many states, once they have that judgment, hospitals and third-party collectors can garnish up to 25% of a patient's wages. They legally reach into your employer's payroll and take a quarter of your paycheck before you even see it.
And if that's not enough, they can also place liens on a patient's home.
Wait, they can go after your house.
Yes. You maintain ownership of your house, but you cannot sell it, and you cannot refinance your mortgage until you pay the hospital's bill plus all the accumulated interest and legal fees. Your home equity becomes a hostage to your medical emergency.
But the absolute most extreme version of this, the thing that honestly stopped me in my tracks reading through these sources, is something called a body attachment.
Ah, yes.
I had to look up how this actually works. If you are sued for medical debt and you miss a post-judgment court hearing, maybe because you couldn't get childcare or you couldn't take off work or the notice went to the wrong address, the creditor can ask a judge to issue a body attachment. It is literally a civil warrant for your arrest. People can be and have been put in jail because they missed a hearing over an unpaid hospital bill.
Which is just staggering. And this aggressive legal machinery forces us to look closely at the role of nonprofit hospitals.
Right.
About half of all hospitals in the United States operate under nonprofit status. And in exchange for billions of dollars in tax exemptions at the local, state, and federal levels, the IRS requires them to provide a community benefit.
Okay.
A core part of that benefit is supposed to be offering financial assistance or charity care to low-income patients.
Wait, wait. If these institutions are granted tax-exempt status specifically to be safety nets, how on earth did the local county courthouse become an extension of their billing department?
It's a contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah. Why aren't these required charity care policies catching people before their wages are garnished?
The breakdown happens in the enforcement. The IRS requires hospitals to make a reasonable effort to determine if a patient is eligible for financial assistance before initiating extraordinary collection actions.
Reasonable effort.
Right. But hospitals frequently align with debt collectors to define reasonable effort as doing the absolute bare minimum, sometimes just hiding a link on their website or handing over a dense packet of paperwork while the patient is still in recovery.
And if the hospital fails to provide that charity care, like, what's the penalty?
There are functionally no consequences. Our sources highlight that the IRS has not revoked a single hospital's nonprofit status for failing to meet these charity care standards in over a decade.
You're kidding.
No. By selling the debt to third-party buyers, the hospital essentially outsources its empathy. They wash their hands of the dirty work, keeping their nonprofit branding intact, while a separate company files the lawsuits and garnishes the wages.
That dynamic just completely shatters the fundamental trust required between a patient and the medical profession.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I think the institution employing the doctor trying to save my life is the same institution that might put a lien on my house in 6 months, I'm simply not going to seek care.
And because these collection tactics are so relentless, the debt rarely stays confined to a courtroom. It inevitably bleeds over into consumer credit reports.
Right.
And this brings us to the current intensely fought battleground over how medical debt is reported and scored in the financial system.
Yeah, to really understand this battle, we need to talk about trade lines. A trade line is basically just industry jargon for a specific account on your credit report, like your car loan or your credit card.
Exactly.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, found that medical debt is the single most common collection trade line on American credit reports. It absolutely dominates the collections ecosystem.
But the CFPB's research uncovered a glaring issue with those medical trade lines. They suffer from a severe predictive value problem.
Predictive value. I always thought predictive value just meant, will this person pay their bills? Like, if I run up $20,000 on a Visa card buying luxury watches and then default, that predicts I am reckless with money.
Right, that's behavioral.
But medical debt doesn't reflect my spending habits, it reflects my bad luck.
Precisely.
Judging someone's financial responsibility based on a surprise out-of-network emergency room bill is like penalizing someone on their driving test because their parked car got struck by lightning.
That's a great analogy.
It doesn't mean you're a bad driver. You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And the credit reporting industry actually acknowledges this reality?
Yeah.
Yeah. Recognizing that medical debt doesn't accurately predict loan defaults, the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, agreed to some voluntary concessions. They recently purged paid medical debts from credit reports, alongside any debts under $500 and any debts less than a year old.
Which on the surface sounds like a huge victory until you run the math on what was left behind.
Right.
Because even after the bureaus scrubbed all those smaller debts, 15 million Americans were still saddled with $49 billion in medical debt sitting right there on their credit reports.
Still a gigantic number.
And because they removed all the tiny $100 and $200 debts from the equation, the average remaining medical balance on credit reports actually skyrocketed to over $3,100. The people left behind are carrying incredibly heavy, catastrophic burdens that continue to ruin their ability to rent an apartment or get a mortgage.
And because the voluntary concessions left the most vulnerable people exposed, the federal government attempted to intervene. The sequence of events here is a fascinating look at administrative law.
Let's hear it.
The CFPB, operating under the Biden administration, proposed and finalized a sweeping federal rule that would have completely banned all medical debt from consumer credit reports, regardless of the dollar amount.
And the agency ran the numbers on that and estimated that erasing this debt from credit histories would have boosted the scores of affected Americans by an average of 20 points.
Which is significant.
Yeah, that's enough to cross the threshold for loan approval, enabling an estimated 22,000 new mortgages a year. It was a literal lifeline.
But immediately after the rule was finalized, a coalition of debt collectors and industry groups filed a lawsuit in federal court. Their argument was that the CFPB had exceeded its statutory authority under the Fair Credit Reporting Act by trying to dictate what types of truthful information could be included in a credit file.
And this is where the political calendar really changed the trajectory of the rule.
It did.
Following a change in administration, the newly installed Trump administration's CFPB reviewed the pending lawsuit. They shifted course entirely, declining to defend the rule in court. The agency formally agreed with the plaintiffs that the previous administration had overstepped its legal bounds.
And without the federal agency defending its own regulation, a federal judge subsequently vacated the rule. It is officially blocked at the federal level.
Which means this fight hasn't ended, it's just fractured.
Yes.
With the federal rule struck down, the battle to protect credit scores has moved directly to state legislatures. Currently, 15 states have stepped into the void to enact their own laws banning medical debt from credit reports. This includes places like California, Colorado, New York, and Virginia.
The consequence of this state-by-state approach, though, is a profound geographic disparity.
Yeah.
Your protection from financial ruin is now entirely dependent on your zip code.
If you don't live in one of those 15 states, you are completely exposed to the credit bureaus. And what's deeply troubling when you layer the maps on top of each other, looking at where the state protections are versus where the debt is concentrated, is the sheer inequity of it.
Oh, the overlap is stark.
The KFF sources show that the highest rates of medical debt are overwhelmingly located in the South. Specifically, in states that have historically chosen not to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
So the populations that have the least access to upfront health care coverage, and therefore the highest baseline risk of falling into debilitating medical debt, are now the exact same populations least protected by this patchwork of state credit reporting laws.
Mm-hmm.
The vulnerability compounds on itself geographically.
It's just wild to step back and realize the full picture here. Carrying an insurance card doesn't actually protect you from the coverage cliff. It just determines how far you fall before you hit the ground.
Unfortunately, yes.
And once you do fall, the hospital you thought was a place of healing might aggressively garnish a quarter of your paycheck or place a lien on your family home. And ultimately, your protection against having that nightmare permanently stain your credit score basically comes down to what state you happen to live in.
If we look at the trajectory of where all this is heading, it leaves us with a deeply unsettling question to consider.
What's that?
Well, we've established through CSPB research that medical debt is circumstantial. It isn't a reliable indicator of financial irresponsibility. Yet, hospitals and debt buyers are increasingly relying on the rigid legal and credit systems to enforce it as if it were. If these two distinct worlds, clinical healthcare and consumer finance, continue to relentlessly collide, are we moving toward a future where our health data and our financial data become completely indistinguishable?
Oh, wow.
Will future mortgage lenders or even potential employers start demanding to look at your family medical history or your genetic markers to determine your long-term financial risk profile?
That is dark.
It really comes down to a question of how much of our physical bodily vulnerability we're willing to let the financial system quantify, score, and penalize.
That is a terrifying thought. When the X-ray machine doesn't just diagnose your broken arm, but automatically calculates the exact moment your bank account, your home equity, and your credit score break along with it.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We appreciate your time, your curiosity, and we look forward to unpacking the next complex topic with you.
See you next time.